You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
8 o'clock, exactly. On Look at, how's that, AJ? How's that taste? What? Suck it, AJ. Made a break on time.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know why you were telling people to suck it.
I was telling AJ.
Man City got off their punishment. Manchester City's ban has been lifted on appeal. Still a fine to be paid, but a huge win for the club. Soccer politics. You also have...
Well, they were cheating, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were exaggerating their profits or something?
No.
Who was doing that? Some soccer team was doing that.
I have to look. I'm not sure exactly what Man City was doing.
I think they spent too much on the international... They were cheating with... I think their expenditures... they did something... Hold on. There was something with the financials. You're right, John.
Yeah, it was something with the financials. Anyway. Their fine. And you know what? Man, soccer. They got more money than God. It is unbelievable the money that they spend on these players.
That's why.
Serious breaches of club licensing and financial fair play regulations and was excluded from European competitions. There it is.
That's why when people around the world, they kind of just scoff at us when we talk about American sports. Yeah, okay, you like your little football thing, but you know how much it costs to even get a chance to sign a player over here? The transfer fees. It'd be like the Texans decided to pay for a wide receiver, and it cost them $80 million just to talk to the wide receiver.
Yeah.
Before you even signed
him. Trust me, Bill O'Brien would do it. It's important to talk to these guys.
So
if it costs $80 million, that's a good bargain.
So how did Liverpool get so good?
Jurgen Klopp, former Borussia Dortmund manager, came over there and kind of changed them. They've been always been a big club, but we talked about it earlier. It's been like 20 years or so since they won a top flight title in England. Took a couple years, but they finally got it, and they're the dominant force. Now they're out of the Champions League, but they won last year's Champions League, and they won the Premier League. So the kings of English football currently are Liverpool.
So how good are they since Atletico Madrid beat their ass?
Well, I don't know how. Sometimes that stuff is like depending on who's injured, because you have to balance a season out.
Sometimes they don't play all their top guys.
Well, in Champions League?
With Champions League, they
do. I just don't know the scenario. Atletico Madrid's a top club. I mean, the third or second best team in Spain, depending on the year, usually the third.
But what does that say for the Premier League if the team that's dominating everybody?
Well, you would say that maybe they put their focus on winning this title, the Premier League title, something they hadn't done. I don't know. I didn't follow Liverpool season too closely. Just sometimes, okay, the team has a goal. This year, we're playing for the Premier League title. This is what we want. We've won a Champions League. And sometimes Champions League will take second fiddle or take second place because, remember, they hadn't done something domestically in 2 decades. So maybe that was their focus. I don't know. It just happens sometimes. They don't always win it. No. Like Barcelona, who was dominant for until this recently in La Liga, didn't always win Champions League. It just happens.
Yeah, and that was back in March too, the Champions League.
Yeah,
maybe you're right. Maybe they were just like, whatever. We got to kick everybody's butt.
Yeah, they were going for like an undefeated season at one point in the Premier League. So maybe that was their focus once they got that far down the line. So I don't know, but English football, you pay that's they're the best team, and it's clear now. Man City gets to play in Champions League, while Liverpool will do that as well next season. But Man City is still involved this season.
Man City's still in it.
Yeah.
713-780-3776. Anything happened over the weekend that you want to talk about, you're more than welcome to get in here. Not much happened over the weekend. The Redskins changing their name today. Well, they're not changing their name today. They're announcing that they're changing their name today. What? That was last week or a week and a half ago that they said, yeah, we've got a study about a new name. What?
Some people believe, and there are some reports out there that it's a copyright thing,
trademark
thing, like someone owns it, so they have to figure that out before they officially name.
Well, that's maybe the Warriors then, because nobody owns Red Tails, right?
Actually, I looked through it, and a guy bought them, I think.
Who bought Red Tails?
A guy who's been buying up Washington trademarks for years now. I guess when the news came, that the Redskins were going to change, that he was like, well, let me snap this up too so they can pay me when it comes time.
That's always a great, you know what? Go and buy all the names on GoDaddy.
Yeah.
Go buy every name. And then, and well, you want it? Come on. Lady A, come on. Come on, Lady A.
Well, I was already taken.
Yeah. So well, actually, it was owned by Lady Antebellum.
Lady A?
Lady A was owned by Lady Antebellum. That's why they're suing the Lady A.
Because they bought the website?
No, not the website. The name. They actually copyrighted the
I
name
thought you
or
were
some
saying
crap.
GoDaddy.
Some,
yeah.
They copyrighted the name and it already belonged, or someone else already had the name.
Do you know I used to have a website?
She wanted Lady A.
She wanted $10 million.
Yeah, $10 million.
She know my website.
And they were like, nah, we're suing you.
My website, sidelineview.com. I think it was thesidelineview.com. I started with me and John Harris, David Stagg, was a longtime listener, was we took our email newsletter, put it on the website, fantasy football rankings each year. We had football articles, stuff like that. Granted, I went and started working for NFL. Johnny was doing text and stuff. We were going to back it off, but then we wanted to just keep it alive and keep doing stuff and post different football stuff there. And it expired, and the day it expired, our GoDaddy account, somebody else was set to buy. Somebody bought it and is basically just holding it hostage, which that's why the site went away.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there are people who will buy your site. If you have a site that's out there, they will wait for it to expire. If you don't get it, they'll buy it and they'll say, okay, want to get it back?
Huh.
Come on.
Well, did they tell you it's about to expire and you just let
Yeah, they do. We just,
so you didn't pay the $15?
Kind of, yeah, you just kind of forget about it or whatever after. Because I'd signed up for a 2-year deal, 3-year deal. And thesidelineview.com, let me see what it is right now. The Sideline View magazine. See, it's a magazine with top six tips to hire a reliable commercial locksmith. Top six tips to choose the best long-distance movers.
That doesn't sound like a good fantasy football site.
No. What does it have to do with Sideline View? Nothing. This is a fake. There's no comments. They make it look like it's a site, right? Make it look trending topics, 0 comments. Trending topics, interesting. No comments on anything they do, literally nothing. And in that way, I'm not ever going to try to buy it back. I don't care. You dummies can have it. I'll just start something else that suckmybutt.com.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
See if they want to buy that one too.
Whoa.
Go ahead and buy that one, dummies.
SMB.com.
Why would somebody steal my stuff?
SMB.com, duh.
What does that mean?
Suck my butt, he said. .com.
Wow.
Why would you want that website?
What kind of website?
I'm pretty sure if you put in that right now.
Okay.
Yeah, guess what's going to come up?
I don't want to put it in.
Write for us a guest post. Contact us.
Why don't you put some comments in there? Hey, thieves, give me back my website.
No, you know, good point. This article's straight trash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of that, how did people respond to your Offensive Rookie of the Year?
So Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year articles came out. And usually, you know, every once in a while I got, you know, some things like CeeDee Lamb wasn't in my top 10. And I felt a little weird not putting him in, but in my Rookie of the Year, like, who is the guy that you would take out here? Now, I will give you some hints here. I go back and look at the history. I go back and look at the history of the award to see who wins. And so I look at, you know, what the trends are. Offensive Rookie of the Year. Here are the trends. Since 1990, just 3 players have won the Heisman and Offensive Rookie of the Year in back-to-back seasons. Kyler Murray, Cam Newton, and Eddie George. Just 3 since 1990. No tight end or offensive lineman has ever won the award, so you can scratch those guys. There have been just 3 wide receivers win Offensive Rookie of the Year over the last 21 seasons. Doesn't that seem impossible?
There's only been 3 what?
Only 3 wide receivers to win Rookie of the Year over the last 21 seasons.
Huh.
Just 3. So that played into not having CeeDee Lamb. The Offensive Rookie of the Year award has been won by the NFC rookies. How many straight years do you think NFC has won Rookie of the Year?
How many straight years has
this surprised me.
No idea. 8.
13.
Really? Why? Yeah.
random.
It is random.
13 straight years. So I had Joe Burrow 1, Clyde Edwards-Helaire 2, DeAndre Swift 3. You know, the last 2 years, really, Kerryon Johnson, they just haven't gotten enough out of Kerryon Johnson. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I know Damian Williams is there also, but he's going to score some touchdowns. He'll catch passes. He's on an
offense. They're
going
to love him.
He's going to score a lot of points. Jonathan Taylor with the Colts, I'd make maybe number 2, but Marlon Mack, they like Marlon Mack a lot. I think Taylor is part of a bully committee that they want to just take over games with physical rushing, but I don't think it's enough to win. Jerry Jeudy, I've got 5. Now, you could argue, why would you have Jerry Jeudy with no CeeDee Lamb? But really, if you look at it, it's Courtland Sutton, and then really nobody else for sure. I think Jerry Jeudy steps in and right away gets a lot of looks. Cam Akers from the Rams, I have number 6. Justin Jefferson from Minnesota, I have 7. Tua, 8. Henry Ruggs, 9. And I like Ruggs a lot, but Derek Carr, the last 3 years, his top receiver has been a tight end for 3 years in a row. And he's always in the bottom half of the yards per completion. He just doesn't throw many deep balls. And in number 10 was a little bit of a surprise. I put Michael Pittman. And the reason I did that, I said having Pittman ahead of a player like CeeDee Lamb may surprise some people, but it's directly related to Pittman's situation. And for me, CeeDee Lamb's got Ezekiel Elliott. He's got Amari Cooper. He's got Gallup. I just don't know. I think he's going to be a pretty good player. I probably should have put him in the top 10. Pittman is big. T.Y. Hilton is a small receiver who plays downfield. That ain't Phillip Rivers' game at all. Phillip Rivers likes to find a big guy that he can, like a Keenan Allen that he can, or Antonio Gates that he can trust. Michael Pittman could end up being that right off the bat in his rookie year. And then my dark horse candidate was Zach Moss with the Bills. Now, okay, there were some people like, where's CeeDee Lamb? Then defensive rookie of the year, there was a little bit of this and that going on. But really, people really started to comment like, why? Why are you even doing this? There's no season. No one's even going to play. Why are you doing a rookie of the year for a league that's not even going to play?
We're going to play.
Why would you waste our time?
Going to play.
Well, first of all, because it was assigned to me by my editor.
Right, because if I want to get a paycheck,
yeah, I want to keep getting paid, number one. Number two, let me ask you, if they move this towards, so let's say that they expedite and get, is there any chance that they would move a season? I do think there's a chance that I don't know how the NFL is going to work. I know college, I feel very strongly that the college football will not be played until there's a vaccine. I just don't see it happening. There's not enough financial incentive for the player to play. Now, even if they move it to the spring, I think there's a good chance a lot of the players duck out on a season. It wouldn't be smart, but a lot of them have high expectations of like, I'm not going to hurt my chances of getting drafted. And they'll be like,
well,
you're a fifth rounder.
I was talking this weekend. It's going to be almost impossible because you have to start later in February, March, because up north you can't start. It's too cold. And you're going to play March, April, May, and then you're going to start up because next season starts in July.
It's the same issue the NBA has. So what you have to do is you have to push. So the NBA, what's the NBA going to do? They're going to, and it's still going to be tight, but the NBA is going to push their season back to Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
You basically would have to eliminate September games, work to October.
That may be the new NBA too, though.
Yes, that's their advantage. The college season could not start on time. If they push it to the spring, but look, John, what would you rather do? Have a tight schedule for college football or have your programs eliminated?
And every league is only playing conference games. That's it.
So they have to eliminate conference games.
JUCO has already moved all their games to spring.
So if you eliminate conference games, you could start in March and be done by May.
Yeah.
But then you have June, July,
and
as
no
you mentioned.
Bowls. And just a
no bowls.
A four-team.
You know what? We'll have the guy. There's a new guy who's in charge of bowls. We'll have him on tomorrow to talk about what the expectations are. As a matter of fact, I had someone reach out to me about an interview with him, and I thought, yeah.
Yep.
Because don't tell the bowl games no bowls.
No. No, I know.
And college football makes money off that, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. That's going to be a hard sell.
The next week?
Yeah. Right. Time to talk. Well, but you know what? If you want to know the truth, won't the teams be better? Won't the playoff be better if the teams play the following week?
Yeah, they've only played like 8 games anyway.
Yeah.
Frankly, it would be.
Right. Hey, you can choose your vehicle right now at ChastainFord.com. Listen, they've got all the vehicles you could possibly need. From the Edge, the Explorer, the Expedition, the Ranger, the Transit Van, the F-150, Super Duty F-250, Super Duty F-350. They got everything in stock right now. And when you get online, there's somebody to answer all your questions right away. Why Chastang Ford? Because it is a family-owned Ford truck dealership in Houston. They've been involved in the truck business since 1933. The Ford truck experts at Chastang Ford. They're going to build, it's what they do. They stayed in business. 85% of their business was return or referral. That just tells you what kind of businessmen they are, how they do business. You're part of the family, and you're going to go back. I'm going back. Next time I need a vehicle, I'm going back to Chastang Ford. My buddy just got a beautiful, beautiful pickup from him at Chastang Ford. It's the only place he buys. You're going to join the Chastang Ford family. You can do it all online. Then if you need your vehicle cleaned, picked up, and fixed, they'll pick it up, fix it, sanitize it, and bring it back to you. You can also... They'll deliver you if you want to test drive. They'll do that as well. All at ChastainFord.com or get over to 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown Chastang Ford.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 818 ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here and hang out with us. New Hampshire Karen has been canceled. So, Dell, you got that?
You sent it to my Twitter?
I sent it on the Brenda.
Oh, okay.
It's on the Brenda. Oh. Well, I don't want to say celebrity. She was at WSMN.
I don't think celebrities. I don't think that's a fair term.
Diana Ploss in New Hampshire.
Nashua. New Hampshire.
Nashua, New Hampshire. And she's got her camera out, and she is videotaping a work crew putting in trees. It looks like trees, and then they've got cement blocks around the trees. It looks like a big job. It's on the sidewalk. And at first she thinks that they're working for the city, but it's a private company. But I guess it's a city job. It looks like downtown Nashua. It looks like what the downtown Nashua would look like, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a main street,
quaint,
a small town.
Place. Yeah, for sure.
And you tell right away that Karen from New Hampshire she's a little nuts. And here's Karen from New Hampshire who no longer works in radio.
Look at this. It's America. Speak English. Speak English. So this is a foreman working for this company, Morin's. And he's speaking Spanish to these guys. So your tax doll is up here in New Hampshire. That's what's going on here. That is what's going on. So now they have people who don't speak English, who are putting in this stuff that taxpayers are paying for. And look what they're doing. This is communism. This is communism.
Wait,
look
what?
At this. They're taking over these streets.
It's a retaining
wall. What they're doing up here in Nashua is permanent. Permanent.
Permanent.
So here's a private company. Wake up. No residents. I want to know, where's Governor Sununu? Where's Governor Sununu? What's your problem?
Why are you arresting?
Are they in America?
Yes.
Okay, they should be speaking English.
Why?
They should be speaking English.
Because what?
They should be speaking English. Are they illegal aliens? They don't speak the language?
What does speaking the language have to do with
Do they not speak the language?
When you drive into the state, what does it say?
Do they not speak the language?
I have no idea.
Okay, why do you care?
Because
I wasn't talking to you.
You're harassing me.
I have a right.
To harass people?
How am I harassing them?
You're yelling at them.
Am I yelling?
Yes.
Oh yeah, okay. Are they illegal? So
I'm trying to enjoy my lunch.
So then go enjoy your lunch. You're why are you wearing a mask?
Why am I wearing a mask?
Yeah. Uh-oh, she's an anti-mask, really? Diana. And then she put out, she got fired, and she said, I'm not backing down, America. She put out some flags.
What does that mean?
I'm not backing down, America.
That's, what. But what does that mean when she says
because she is American, Del, speak English.
That's not.
You speak the Queen's English. You're probably from England.
That's not a law, by the way. Okay. At least not that I've
seen. Are you an alien?
No.
From England?
No, actually. Okay. No, what would happen if I was?
We don't want you people around here.
Well,
okay. I probably got bad teeth.
I know that. I don't know. I know you don't want me around here.
No.
I'm pretty sure that Karen wants
nothing to do.
No one
wants me around either, Del.
Well, for other reasons. I'm pretty sure Karen doesn't want anyone around here who looks like me.
She's never seen anyone that looks like you.
It's New Hampshire.
It's New Hampshire. Nashua.
Is she speaking English, by the way?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. New Hampshire English.
So she, I said, she said, the whole time I'm hearing it with the exact accent, all I can think of is Rachel Dratch from Saturday Night Live, you know, the Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
The one who, and I said him, there's one where her and Jimmy Fallon, when he was on, he was there, Sully and somebody else from on the Saturday Night Live, Sully and what's her name? There's the characters they do. Sully and Denise. And when you hear her doing her Boston accent, you're like, wow, that's the same person.
That's Diana Ploss.
Yeah.
She is, and she lost her job. You got them? Here they are. Here's Saturday Night Live.
$15.
Wicked pisser. With more Asians.
I would be Gryffindor.
You are Hufflepuff and you know it.
You are.
They're making out.
Great. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes. What percentage of freshmen live on campus?
Also, is there an in-house Dunkin'?
Yeah, I'm in dire need of a butter pecan Dunkachino.
I'm sorry, folks, who are you? Name's Pat Sullivan. This is my girl, Denise.
Call me Zazu!
The radio Karen sounded like.
Yeah. No. And
it's a real shame Karen lost her job.
Well, she doesn't care though, I don't think.
She's not backing down because America.
She's not backing down. I'm not backing down. Speak English, Del.
Is she going to go on?
Speak American English, not your English English.
What does she call it? Communism or socialism?
It's communism.
Is she going to go on unemployment?
She goes, that's communism right there. And all they're doing is putting up retaining walls to a tree.
For a tree, yeah.
The guys are like, we're just going to set four stones.
It's communism.
No, because
it's a communist tree settlement.
They're not speaking English, so it's communism.
Do you think that she's trying to free Hong Kong?
I don't think she gives a damn.
Do you think she's ever written hashtag Team Jamel?
I think very few people have
written that. You do that.
Do you think that she's going to vote for Joe Biden?
New Hampshire. She didn't say Trump 2020. She just said this is America. So I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she's all about Trump.
Yeah, I know, John.
I'm pretty sure she is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So,
why are you wearing a mask?
Right.
Why? Yeah. Like, whoa, what are we doing here?
That was a dead giveaway.
Did it just pivot?
Yeah.
What do you mean? The president wore a mask over the weekend.
He did. And he looked manly doing it.
Yeah. Shout out to his campaign for going, Joe Biden's done. You mean because he wore a mask after 130,000 people are dead? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Mask. Okay. The mask.
So, on the page, the TMZ has the video. If you want to see the video, it's on TMZ of her yelling at these guys. So, I just happened to notice on the other videos that are out. Oh, Miami Zoo gorilla gets coronavirus nasal swab test. I'm like, what? Should you see what's happening here?
Tested negative, by the way.
I bet a gorilla didn't take that well.
So this is my question.
Well, they got him sedated. Stick it all the way up to the brain because a gorilla would have gone, just crushed you.
Well, they got him sedated.
Better be a long swab.
Shango is 433 pounds. He's a lowland gorilla, and he's immobilized for treatments of some wounds he experienced in a confrontation with his brother. In an abundance of caution, he also received tests for COVID-19, thankfully negative. Now, here's the thing. And you see pictures of this. You better really have him out cold. Because I'm guessing that your restraints might not hold up against a 433-pound gorilla, number one. Number two, is this really a thing that they're testing
animals? Yeah,
all the animals in zoos for COVID?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about all the animals, but yeah, animals are getting it. Yeah. And they want to make sure, you know.
Because at first I was told, don't everyone stay away from your dogs. Dogs are potential carriers. And they're like, all right, you're good with dogs. Don't worry about it. You can let dogs kiss you the mouth again.
Really?
Yeah, they can't.
Why do you let dogs kiss you on the mouth anyway?
Well, that's what the report said. Come out. They just said,
why would you kiss your dog on the mouth?
Your dogs can tongue kiss you
why
now.
Why would you tongue kiss your... Why are you...
Everything's fine.
Why are you Frenching your dog?
We can't listen to you anyway.
No, why are you Frenching your dog?
But you don't like dogs. You can't,
no, I like
you
dogs.
Can't
dogs are fine.
You can't have a legit...
Dogs are fine.
You can't have a viable conversation.
Don't French. Don't French kiss your dog.
Well, it's not French
kissing. That's fair to say that, but we can't even have a dog conversation. No,
people do that. They're licking the dog. The dog's licking... Yeah, they stick their tongue out to the dog. And the dogs sticking their tongue.
There's not a lot of people that do this.
Do people do it?
Yeah, people, but not a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot
of
people.
They do it. They do.
People say they
do
it.
Some people are doing it.
The very best people.
It's the highest rated kiss.
The very best people are doing it.
827 ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3777. That was a little jab at dog owners. That's all. Stop.
I know. Yeah, you act like all dog owners are opening their mouth and just trying to French their dogs all the time.
It's a little jab. That's all.
I know what you're trying to do. When we come back, I want to talk about the Masvidal Usman fight from UFC 251. It was a pretty good card. Unfortunately, the main event didn't live up to the hype. We'll get to that in a second. I want to tell you about SiteJab, a local company. And anytime you local companies are supporting a local radio station, we're very pleased. It's local, supporting local. And that's one of the things that I like to stand for here in Houston, especially during these tough times. But I can tell you right now, forget all that. How about the fact that you have a local company like SiteJab who can work on your website? They've been doing it for 2 decades now, and they can do it through Zoom technology, you know, the online conferencing, or they can even do it in person. Of course, they're, you know, very safe in terms of how they do that. But developing your website or updating your website is essential. 80% of the people who are going to do business or will consider doing business with you are going to look at your website. And so being able to convert those eyeballs into leads is essential. And understanding how the design, the information, and then all of the different features that they offer, how that plays out is something that SiteJab is exceptional at. And if you don't believe me, why don't you just set up a free consultation with them on the website? Go to SiteJab, SiteJab.com. You can schedule your consultation, and you can look over the web design, their services that they offer, which includes video production, business consulting, lead generation, branding, social media management. I mean, they're more than just a web designer. They are a wholesale suite of products that can help you turn your small to medium-sized business into a growing entity. Go to SiteJab.com today and find out more about how you can start getting your business ramped up. SiteJab, SiteJab.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
8:31 here on The Bench. It's John, Lance, it's Dell. Hey, if you guys have comments, I know you do, on the
on UFC 251. If you watch that card, you can reach us by phone, 713-780-3776. Jump in and give your rundown on some of the fights. Or you can do the same thing on the text line, which is the same number, 713-780-3776. Of course, you can hit us up on Twitter, at John Granato, at Lance Zierlein, at Dell V2. Over the weekend, UFC 251 was held on Fight Island. Gilbert Burns was set to fight Kamaru Usman for the title. They are teammates. Gilbert Burns tested positive for COVID and was out. In a week's notice, Jorge Masvidal stepped in and picked up the fight. Now, Masvidal has been a hot fighter as of late, but there has been a discussion about whether or not he is a great fighter or just a good fighter with some good wins. Who's more, you may remember he got his start being in Kimbo Slice's backyard, like kind of a, he was an undercard on a couple of Kimbo Slice's backyard fights. And he was really, really good, a good boxer in those. Well, of course, he's become a mixed martial artist, and those are, you know, that was years ago. And he was, you know, he was okay for a while, and then all of a sudden something clicked, and he became a really good fighter. And I was very excited. He was plus 230, and I thought, this is good odds. This is very good odds for him. And he got into the fight, and you could see the first round, I think you could argue he won the first round. Usman, who has a wrestling pedigree, really couldn't do a lot with him. After that, it turned into Usman. You could tell in the second round that he was a little tired. Masvidal was. And Masvidal had to fight off, you know, shot takedowns, and he had constantly sitting there with his underhooks in, trying to prevent Usman from hitting him with shoulders and toe stomps. Usman, for basically four rounds, stomped on his toes against the fence. It was like nothing but foot stomps and shoulder, you know, and trying to strike his shoulder into the chin of in the head of Masvidal. And it turned out to be an extremely boring fight, frankly. There was not a lot of action. It was one of Dana White's absolute nightmares. It harkened back to the way the UFC got sometime in the mid-2000s with, you know, the Randy Couture's of the world, the ground and pound stuff, where they were active on the ground, but, you know, there's a thought of the, it's called lay and pray, which is a less active version of the ground and pound. And what happened was, I think at some point Dana White understood fans want to see stand-up fighters and they want to see strikers. They don't want to see pure grapplers. And so what you've had is you have either fewer grapplers being put on a card, or with these knockout bonuses and incentives, more and more people are going for the stand-up stuff. And so that's, I think the UFC, Dana White, from a marketing standpoint, has been very smart. That doesn't minimize that jiu-jitsu and grappling and wrestling are extremely viable forms of combat there, but it's just not as easy to sell guys who are, you know, who are constantly on the ground, and there's not back and forth action. Well, in this fight, unfortunately, it wasn't even on the ground. It was up against the fence most of the time, and there just wasn't, and there was no way for Masvidal to win a round after round one. Like, Usman just smothered him. He was smart the way he did it. He didn't let Masvidal get going. And Usman has a very effective way of fighting that is not super fun to watch. It is just not fun to watch. And at least it certainly wasn't for 251. He's had more exciting fights than that. But that one ended up being, for what was overall a pretty good card, that one was a disappointing finish. And the fight didn't even start until like midnight. It took forever to get there. Lance McCullers is commenting on it. They're showing his comments on the UFC's done a good job of integrating Twitter comments, you know, after fights or between rounds of, I think it's sometimes even during fights, of famous people, you know, athletes, actors, whatever, commenting on the fights. And Lance McCullers was one of them. Of course, not only is he a pitcher for the Astros, but he and Carlos Correa have the Walkout podcast, which is an MMA podcast. And he had one at the end where it's got that gif of the baby. You've seen it before. The baby is leaning against the couch and just falls completely forward like asleep. That's what he put about that fight, and that's the way I felt about it. I was very disappointed with that fight. And I do think it would have been a better fight if Masvidal
had more time to prepare. It's not an excuse. Masvidal got paid, and he got a good contract. Like, he used this opportunity to leverage himself into a new, fatter contract with the UFC. But 1 week in advance against a talented fighter like Usman, it was just not enough. His gas wasn't up. And even if it was, I don't know that it would have made a difference, because unless you can keep separation from a guy who smothers you, it was just not going to... Yeah, I just don't think it would have made much of a difference. So if you have comments on that, if you guys have comments, feel free to jump in. Let's get John in here. John wants to talk about it. What's up, John? How you doing?
Yeah, calling about the MMA stuff, UFC, yeah. Specifically Dana White. You know, back in the day when they tolerated a lot of the ground stuff, you couldn't deny that it was, even though it might be boring, you're getting the best against the best. Now that Dana White has... He's actually not renewed contracts of fighters that are ground and pound guys. They do these bonuses, so everybody stands up. He's basically turned the MMA into kickboxing.
I think that's accurate. I don't think that's inaccurate.
So it's not really the best MMA fighter there is. It's the best guy that'll stand up, and you might as well be bum fights almost. To me, it's he's
well, they're.
I mean, people are
quite a bit more talented.
Yeah, well, people are beer-swilling morons, and they're ADD riddled, and they've ruined baseball because of changing it because of them. And now they change MMA because they can't stand people not smacking each other in the face. And there's just another example of sports getting manipulated because of the moron fan. I mean, it sells, that congratulations, but you're basically not getting the best fighter in the world still, I think, if that's the case.
Well,
I mean, you're eliminating guys that get ground and pound.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, and some who are just purely, grappling based and looking for submissions. Thanks for the call, John. But I mean, here's the thing, though: the UFC is trying to make money. This just in: the UFC is they sold a few years ago for a crap ton of money. They just did a huge deal with ESPN. I mean, Dana White's primary objective, I don't think, is to get the very best fighters, or he would tell you, yeah, it's to get the best fighters, guys who fight. And for his money, remember, he started off as a, you know, boxing as his actual background, but he understood that, as he said years ago in an interview I did with him back at 6'10", boxing is your grandfather's sport, and this is going to be the new sport. This is going to be the sport. He saw it. He had very, very clear vision. I thought the same thing. I knew where it would go. I'd never thought it would get to this point, but Dana understands at some point UFC kind of lost a little bit of its momentum. And granted, it's way too saturated at this point. It's hard to keep up with it like I used to, because it's so saturated. But at the same time, if your fan base and the pay-per-view buys want to see stand-up action, then you're going to give them what they want. You're not going to give them a boring brand. The NFL also makes 5-yard chuck rules because they want points. Basketball makes rule changes because they want points. Baseball's trying to make it faster and keep the action going. Dana White's not doing anything that the other major sports aren't doing. And I know that's kind of what you're saying, John, but at the end of the day, you've got, all of these businesses exist with TV deals and with ticket sales and with pay-per-view buys. And unless you are giving people what they want, those things are not going to be high enough for you. And that's the way it is. And I don't think the UFC is any different than any other major sport who looks for ways to keep their sports, you know, exciting.
Yeah, I don't. You can't blame them for wanting to keep it exciting. The two guys laying on the ground is just boring. It is.
It's
just
boring. Fight was trash, period, says one guy on Twitter.
It's just boring when they're laying on top of each other, and it's just boring. It is. And, you know, the more action you can get in any sport, the better. And I can't blame Dana White for that. Luis wants to get in here. Hey, Luis, what's going on?
Hey, man, good morning. One quick question. Can we talk about a Max Holloway fight, man? That was a robbery.
Yeah.
Let's stop talking about this massive ball open. That, you know, coming to the fight, dude had to lose 20 pounds in 6 days, man. That was, you could tell he was going to be tired.
Well, you're talking about Masvidal now.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that was a miraculous. To lose that much and have no chance to get your gas up, I don't know what the hell my thought was with plus 230. But the Max Holloway fight, he definitely got beat 3. I mean, he definitely won 3-2, don't you think?
Yeah, fan, definitely, man. That was a big, big robbery, man. Yep. I don't know what. I mean, I was watching the fight, man. I'm actually a little older. I was watching the fight with a lot of young cats. It's crazy the way you're talking about how they look for entertainment, man. They want that quick knockout. I've been watching MMA since day one, and to me, it's actually getting bad, man. A lot of rules, too many. I don't know, man. But that Max Holloway fight, man, talk about it.
Yeah, Max. So I thought Max did a real. Max looked very confident early on in a fight. This is such a short, stubby fighter he was going up against. But Max had already been beaten by him, and then I thought he did a good job of keeping his, you know, using his size advantage or his length advantage, keep him at bay. He was very unorthodox with his approach, which he always is. And I thought Max. Now he was gassing out at the end. But what I mean, I don't care about championship rounds. You have five rounds. Unless you're going to change the scoring system, this is what I can't stand about boxing and MMA. If you're going to have a scoring system, if you're going to say, okay, these are the championship rounds, I understand the concept of championship rounds is where champions rise to the top. But they still count the 12th round in a boxing match and the 5th round of a UFC fight count the exact same as the first round. Unless they're going to start actively and openly saying this is our new scoring system where the last two rounds, last three rounds of a boxing match and last two rounds of a UFC fight, of a five-round championship fight, they are going to be weighted heavier, then I don't care. You can't tell me, well, you know, the champ won the two championship rounds, you know, or in the championship rounds he really stepped up. So it's 10-9. It's a 10-point must. It's 10-9. I don't care who won the championship rounds. Put together your math. Your math tells you that Max Holloway won because he had three 10-round. Now, I say that, but two of the judges obviously did not have him winning three rounds. They had whatever his name. I can't remember his name. Orlowski or whatever his name.
Dan Orlowski?
No, the little sawed-off Australian. He's the champ. But they had him winning three rounds, which I don't know how anyone saw that as him winning three rounds.
Volkanovski?
Yeah, that's it. I'd like to call him a sawed-off Australian.
Say it to his face.
About 5'1", legs as big as this table. He will kick you hard in his size 28 pants.
Yeah. What?
And that's 28.
You're talking real flagrant.
26
when he's on
pants.
Fight Island.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's over in Fight Island.
Stay there.
To say. I want to hear you say it to his face.
We're having a spike in Rona. You don't need to come here.
Say it to his face. All right? Spit in his mouth and see how that works out for you.
Yeah. Only if he sleeps, because that's when Lance likes to do it. His fetish is spitting in someone's mouth while he sleeps.
I like NFL to spit in his mouth while he sleeps.
And see, this isn't true. If a fighter looks like they got their ass whooped, then they typically did, no matter the stupid scoring. Well, yeah, unless like Masvidal, who had two unintentional headbutts, he had gashes in over his head and in his eye. And so he had blood. That doesn't mean you got your ass whooped. Sometimes when you get headbutted unintentionally. So that's not always true. Absolutely not a robbery. The third round was close. I'd say the third round was close. I had it for Holloway, but I could see how people had it the other way. I couldn't see how two out of three had it the other way. I would disagree.
Yeah. 845 ESPN 975 713 780 3776. If you have anything else you want to talk about or you want to still talk about this, you're more than welcome. Come on in.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 975. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 975.
On ESPN975.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
One of the things that happened, by the way, on a couple people have asked on Twitter, Dana White did comment on the very slow stoppage of Pietra, Jan, and Jose Aldo. Aldo just basically sat on the was on his hands and knees or his elbows and knees on the mat, protecting his head and getting punched for, I don't know, 3.5 minutes before the ref would stop it. He wasn't fighting back, was just basically leaking blood all over the mat. And, I mean, he took so many unanswered shots. And one dumb ass on Twitter had the gall to say, this is what we're tuning in for, Lance. You give, you know, if he wants to, you know, he got in the ring. He should take as much punishment as possible. I'm like, what kind of stupid ass is this?
What?
Who are you talking to me? Why are you talking to me on Twitter, dummy?
Wait, what?
Jose Aldo was unable. The rules are very simple. It's a subjective decision making of a referee to decide when a fighter can no longer protect himself viably and is not fighting back. Aldo was literally in a position where he couldn't throw a punch, taking punch after punch after punch and elbows to the side of the ears, the face. Just, it was absolutely ridiculous. And the official stoppage of the fight came at 3:24 of round 5, but Dana said horrible, horrible stoppage by that referee. It should have been stopped way sooner, you know. It looks like we have to tighten up our refs and judges here in Fight Island. Judges obviously means Max Holloway, I'm sure. Twitter reacts to Kamaru Usman's boring as bleep title defense over Jorge Masvidal. It really was boring. Dana said, I thought Aldo looked great for people that were criticizing him, saying he doesn't deserve another title shot. He fought the next guy lined up. Man, Jan looks good. Jan looked really, really good. But anyway.
All right, let's get John in here. Another UFC call. What do you say, John?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Really enjoyed the show. Hey, I just wanted to say I went to watch the fight at Twin Peaks, and I found this kind of speaks a little bit for maybe where sports is going. They had the social distancing going, so every only 50% of the place was full. Normally on a fight night, that'd be 100% full. And then without the spectators and the excitement and without the crowd at the bar, I just found the environment was really a lot more boring, you know. I agree with you 100%, Lance. The championship fight was boring, but the three or four fights before that were actually quite exciting. But it just, you didn't feel the same spirit in the bar. I know I was usually I talked to people around me. I couldn't do that, so I don't know if that was just because the championship fight was boring or if this is a little bit of what sports is going to be facing without having the enthusiasm of the crowd feeding the people watching.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation because so we already see soccer. That's really the only, we have NASCAR doesn't matter. Golf doesn't matter. You don't have to have the crowd, but for soccer, the basketball tournament, I have a hard time. There wouldn't have been a ton of people there anyway. Soccer's the one that they have said that there is a difference in home field advantage. One of the things they found is that the home field advantage is not as pronounced, that it really is more about who's in the best shape. And the better teams are just whacking people right now. I think if we get to baseball, it won't be as big a deal. Basketball, to me, is the biggest deal because basketball has swings. We always talk about the 10-point swings, the 12-point swings, because it's momentum. Up, timeout. You got to get a timeout. Why do coaches get timeouts? They get timeouts because there's a momentum run going, and the crowd's really into it, and you want to calm the crowd down and get it to a commercial break and slow things down. I don't know. Without the crowds being into it, I do think that there is going to be...
You're still going to have runs. You've got to call timeouts to stop a run.
But there's something to the momentum of a crowd being on your side. And I think it's really... I think it's more... I don't know if it's more the team who's the home team who gets pumped up or if it's the visiting team who starts to get tight because they feel the inevitable.
Well, you may see more runs by the... a quote-unquote visitor.
Yeah, since there is no
home. Yeah, because there is no home.
There's no home.
So, but you're still going to see big swings in basketball.
I think this will be a very interesting study for truly analytical line makers who are saying, for the first time, this is the first time they've ever been able to take a long-term look at neutral courts.
But it's going to be such a small sample size that I don't think you're going to learn anything from it. Playoffs because too. You don't know. Are you sure that road teams won't have a big score, you know, a big swing too. We've seen it all the time.
There are no road teams.
Well, no. But road teams, real road teams, when we did have fans in the stands, went on runs too.
Well, what I'm saying is they have power ratings for all these teams that are based on how they have performed. They have numbers that are based on their performance. Granted, you have to understand that there's going to be a disruption of those numbers because of the amount of time. They're going to be off for 120 days by the time this kicks off. But once they do, you are still going to have numbers that you already have set based on prior performance, home and away. Now you get to look at neutral numbers. And for teams who play longer into the season, not just the season, obviously shorter season, but into the playoffs, they will have neutral numbers for the first time ever that I can recall, where you're going to have a sample size of neutral numbers, and you get to see, and you get to match that against what you had. It's obviously imperfect because you've had the break, but it is still most of the same players.
I think it'll only be something, an issue, if a team that's not a good team wins.
Well, I'm not saying issue.
You know, because if the Lakers win, or the Bucks win, or the Clippers win, we're going to go, well, yeah, probably would have won anyway.
I don't even care what happens, and I don't think the line makers do. I think they want to see how close is this game played to what our numbers are.
See, but how many games are played as close to the numbers anyway?
Plenty.
But a lot. But there are plenty that aren't.
When you have a sample size, they're able to reduce it down, and they find that number. And so,
right. So, you know, we always say, well, man, how does Vegas know it? Well, you know, they don't always. It happens. It happens where you hit exactly on the number, or it's really close to the number, and there's one basket or here or there. But there's plenty of blowouts, and there's plenty of games that aren't on the number.
Yeah, but their spread numbers are consistent based on how they perform. That's why you have a number that takes that into account, your plus and your minus.
Maybe I read what he's saying is wrong, but what about, I thought he was talking about the viewing experience.
Well, that's what he was talking about.
Because, like, we all know when you're the home team, and maybe you're not at the game, but you're watching, and your team goes on a run and hits a three, the crowd explodes, you explode, everyone at home is going crazy because the Rockets just went on a 10-0 run, and James hit a three to force a timeout. Will that affect your emotional buy-in when it's NBA basketball and it's for something, it means something, and you're locked in, that's your favorite team? But if they're playing in pretty much a sterilized environment and there is no emotion, does that affect how you watch this game? Does it affect how locked in you are to the game?
I don't think so.
I see.
Here's the thing: is I think this UFC fight, this card was boring. So
the bar card wasn't boring. There was one bad. There was the bad fight. Max Holloway was a pretty good fight. Rose Namajunas was a good fight. Like, I don't think it was a boring card. The fights up to that had been the case. Do you like going and watching sporting events live with other people?
Yes.
Because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Yes. I think that's his
Dell
point.
Dell hates that.
But I think that's his
point.
Well,
but here's the deal. Let's find out. When the Rockets are in the playoffs and it's half full, I think people are still going to be in it. I think you're at a bar watching a Texans game on a Sunday afternoon and it's still only half full. I think people are still going to be jumping up, you know, and screaming at the TV and screaming at Bill O'Brien, and they'll still be into it.
But even if you're at your local sports bar and you're watching the game, and let's say Deshaun hits a dig route for a first down, whatever it is, whatever would normally get you excited. And but you and the crowd are the only ones reacting, because if you look into the stadium, there's no one there. Will your emotional buy-in be the same, considering it's just 22 guys on a field?
Yeah, just because I don't hear the crowd noise from the guests, I'd still be into it.
Because you hear people talk about, even when they're at home watching it, the crowd, you know, sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much that'll play a part in how.
Well, I mean,
watch.
Not if you're sitting in your living room, probably. It'll probably seem. But if you're sitting with people, even if it's a half full sports bar, I think you're still going to be into it in that same way. There was one other point I want to make. 857 ESPN 97.5 713-780-3776. You're more than welcome to get in here and talk about this or anything else that you want to talk about. Come get some. I think we're going to be like that for the Rockets. I really do. I think we're going to be like, come on, you know, even when they're on a run or when they're behind or screaming at the TV, I think we're still going to be doing that. Because if you want to know the truth, I think the basketball tournament looks pretty damn good. I don't care that there's no fans there.
Actually, you know what? The level of play, I actually have been kind of impressed.
Yeah, and that's going to be the way in the NBA. As long as they make it look good. If it's all empty seats, then yeah. But they've got a great backdrop for the basketball tournament. that really has made a difference to me. It doesn't matter that there aren't fans there. That backdrop looks pretty damn good. Hey, there's story after story after story. Becky and Charles had to sell their home to move closer to Becky's mom. In just 2 days, they got two offers and sold for $7,000 over the asking price. And that's what the Loken Group does. The Loken Group at Keller Williams Platinum is unbelievable in that they have so many more people that – but when you're as big as they are and they do as much as they do, they have got to market – they market it. And that's the whole thing about your home is how are you marketing it? How are you marketing it? And the Loken Group knows how to take all those pictures, how to put it on the website, how to do everything about this. And oh, by the way, they'll give you an immediate cash offer, which you go straight to sold. Okay, so they will do that. And if they don't sell it, if they can't sell it, they'll buy your house. And they're guaranteeing to buy your house. It's unbelievable what they're doing. You need a friend? You're going to think Lance Loken is your best buddy after this is all said and done. TheLokenGroup.com. That's TheLokenGroup.com. Their group is $530 million in volume and over 2,100 homes. For the average agent, it takes 49 days to sell a home, just 32. You're talking about a month. Or in a lot of places, a lot of times, a lot less. TheLokenGroup.com, the L-O-K-E-N group.com, 281-861-4624.
ESPN 97.5.